Business Podcast. I am your host, Eddie Linnenstein, and I am here. We'll just call her Steph for the moment. Didn't get clearance on using the last name, so we'll stick with Steph. Steph, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you.
Well, thanks for this. You know, I love when I get. It's interesting. There's a collection of people that I talk to or have had interactions with on social media, and it's kind of like I don't really know how the dialogue began, but I feel like maybe we've been following each other for a little while. And I got this really cool message from you about a little over a month ago, where you just said, hey, I don't know if this is the place to do it, but I'm a patient or a former patient of Dr. Schubiner, and I've had complete healing of 2 years of terrible chronic pain. And we're going to love to hear your story and probably maybe even more so learn how you overcame it. So maybe first of all, just tell us, where in the world is Carmen San Diego? Where in the world are you calling from?
I am coming from West Michigan, Grand Haven to be exact. But yeah, using my last name is totally fine too. It's not a secret.
Okay.
It's Buchanan, but it doesn't matter.
Always one of my favorite last names too. I remember when I was a kid, I was like 14 or 15, and there was a wrestler named Bull Buchanan, and I thought, what an awesome last name Buchanan is.
That's funny.
Well, let's get us started. What's some of your background? And one thing I'm curious about is how old were you when pain really started to happen, like when it was now becoming part of your life?
So a little complicated, and I won't completely go into probably all the details, but it initially started, the leg pain, which is my major complaint of it all, was initiated 6 weeks after I had my second son. So I was 25, almost 20, actually just turned 26, sorry. So, yeah, it was 6 weeks after I had him, just type of personality I guess I have, I decided to paint my bathroom, and I was like up on a counter painting, and I jumped down really hard, and I didn't instantly have pain, but that next morning woke up with like a burning, terrible pain down the back of my leg. People will call like sciatica pain.
Yeah.
And so that's when it initiated. It went away after trying everything. It didn't completely ever go away, but it went away like substantially about 6 months after that. For about a year, I had some relief, but then it came back majorly about, actually it was April 2017, I believe. So I had an initial bout of it, but after studying TMS and really reading about everything, I think I had some form of it most of my life, really. Since I was a kid, I always had, I think, some type of chronic issue like IBS or grinding my teeth. It presented as that, like after marriage, my husband was deployed, and I didn't think was stress related. I just thought it was just a random thing, a structural issue. I'm like, it's just caused by me grinding my teeth or the way my mouth is. But yeah, always had that, but it got really bad. If you wanted me to continue in the actual story.
Well, a couple things that I'm just curious on, the teeth grinding, I know that's not the focus of the interview. Was that like teeth grinding in the middle of the night, or was that like you're just sitting there kind of passively and you're just noticing that you're doing it?
No, it wasn't something I was really conscious of. It was always when I was sleeping. So I would wake up and I could hardly open my mouth, and people would just be like, oh, just relax. You know, it's probably because this or this. But I'm like, no, this is, I mean, it was a major thing. I would try to open my mouth, and for like the first few hours of the day, I could hardly even do that. And then I'd get really awful teeth, like sensitivity and pain due to that from the grinding. But then that went away. Then it came, there's never much of a gap between some issue. It was that. And then it kind of went into the back and leg pain about a year after that. So
the landing, the landing on the leg part. Now that's like, the assumption obviously then is an injury. And you said you did get a pretty prolonged piece of relief. Was that after physical therapy or after some kind of a physical domain where you were just sort of convinced, oh yeah, that was the thing that fixed it? What do you think?
So I had tried everything after that first bout of it. I was on it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to get to the root of this, what it is. There's a couple really bad nights where I actually went to the ER for relief. And I'm like, this is just so bad. I can't take the burning. But it had ended in, I tried physical therapy. I had, I think, two or three physical therapists the first time I had tried, and then it ended in injections. And it eventually just kind of subsided. We had a lot going on, moving, some better changes in my life. And I'm like, maybe the positivity of that was helpful in it. I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah.
But I just chalked it up to like, it was just a weird flare up. I never really found out the cause of it. But I would always, after that, if I did, like, I thought it was because I was doing too much in a day, I would feel super stiff in my back. And like, I couldn't even move my right leg up very far. And that just always happened. I expected that at the end of the night. But I'm like, as long as I don't have that burning pain, I can deal. Like, that's fine. But after I healed, like the second time, I don't have any of that anymore. So weird. But
well, that's a it's the perfect way to roll in. So for those of you that don't know, you're out in Michigan, and coincidentally, and we're gonna get there, but Dr. Schubiner is also out in Michigan. Mm-hmm. So spoiler alert, it sounds that's probably where this is going to to head. But how did you, you know, I'm always so curious and fascinated on, like, how do people go from thinking this is a purely physical thing to somehow they stumble across this book or this concept, or where did that turning point come for you?
So I had some awesome people in my life who gave me the Healing Back Pain book, and I read it really quickly. And then I ordered the other two and read those. And I'm like, okay, this makes sense. I get it. I'm this personality type. It really made sense. But at that point, the first time I was given it, it just didn't really, I don't think I was at my bottom yet. And I feel like some people just have to get there. They have to get to that kind of rock bottom point before they accept it.
Yeah.
And I hadn't tried it, feel like, every option yet. So I didn't really, it was initially, after, before I read all the, you know, science and read all of his work, I was a little bit offended, honestly, because I was like, well, okay, I get you think that I'm stressed out, but it was just kind of like the, this is in your head. I didn't understand that. I'm like, this pain is so intense, so real. Like, if I push on my back, it causes more pain.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't just in my head. I didn't grasp that part of it yet. And I was also like, I guess a little prideful, because they were like, you know, you can see outwardly, you know, you have a lot going on in your life. Your mom has cancer, all these, you know, factors. But I'm just like, are you saying I'm not handling it well? Like, I don't even cry, which is, you know, part of it, you know? So, I think reading the books was just a really good intro for me. And then, after that, in trying all my other ways and methods and doctors, I just had to get to the point of like, okay, this isn't working. Like, I tried all in all, I think it was like 4 or 5 different physical therapist. I tried a chiropractor, and yeah, it can spiral so quickly, like the whole nocebo effect, the opposite of placebo. And that's what happened to me. But, I feel like I'm rabbit trailing a little bit from your initial question.
that's but, okay. I was, no, you answered it just fine. I'm curious on where, you don't have to say exactly who it was, but the person that did hand you the book or make the suggestion, was this a friend? Was this a family member or?
Yeah, there were people through our church who he had some back pain and stuff too.
Okay.
But, and I'm like, yeah, it's interesting, but, and I get it, but I was kind of a skeptic, honestly, a little bit. And, it wasn't until I had another person, come up to me. Our church actually had like, a prayer night, and I was one of the people they had the whole church pray for. But someone came up to me and was like, she sent me a message on Facebook and was like, I know this is, I don't want you to be offended or anything, but your pain is not in your head. I'm not saying that, but, pain is caused by the brain. And she just gave kind of like her testimony of having migraines for 37 years.
Wow.
I believe it was. And was healed by Dr. Schubiner, and she sent me a YouTube video of her in Detroit at a conference with him at MSU. Or I think it was at MSU, I believe. And I just listened to her whole, well, his spiel and her recovery from that. And I'm like, wow, 38 years of migraines. That's intense.
And that was somebody
who just healed from that.
That was somebody you knew personally.
Uh-huh, yeah.
He brought up on the podcast, because one of the things I did with him was like a Q&A, and somebody had asked, they'd had, you know, 4 years of pain or 5 years of pain or something. And they mm-hmm. had asked, you know, am I too far gone, basically? And I had asked him, and he gave an example of somebody, and I can't remember if it was migraines or not, but he had said somebody that was in pain for 37 years of this thing, surely yeah. this person you're talking about has to be the same mm-hmm. person that he's that he oh, was yeah. talking about.
Probably. She's amazing. But he, oh my gosh. I told my husband before I would name my next child after Dr. Schubiner. I'm so thankful for him.
So would they be named Howard, or would they be named Schubiner, or would they?
That's a good question.
That's so funny. So how did you end up being able to get in? I've heard stories about like people trying to book with. I should back up and clarify. You saw Dr. Schubiner. You went to his office and were examined. Okay. Uh-huh. How long? Because I've heard the Sarna wait list was forever. How did you? Mm-hmm. How far in advance did you have to make your appointment and all that kind of thing?
I think it was only a couple months in advance. To be honest, I emailed him saying I knew this woman he helped, and I just told him a little bit of my story, and I'm like, I've already read your work. And I got in pretty quickly, actually. It wasn't too much of a wait, but also being local, I can assume there's other people who'd want to get in with him who aren't so close too. Yeah. But it was pretty amazing. A doctor that actually takes the time and listens to you and your history. And I mean, it was at least 2 hour long appointment, you know, compared to just being ushered in and out of a normal doctor.
Yeah. So talk about that. 'Cause I don't think, maybe there has been one, but I don't think I've interviewed anybody that has gone through an appointment with Schubiner. So do you mind like going a little bit further in detail and just, you know, giving us a synopsis of you walk in, what sort of things is he asking you? Does he seem confident about it? Did he seem like he mm-hmm. was you know, kind of run us through like, you know, the intro of a movie or something.
So he wanted to know a lot about me and my personality. He's just like, what are you like? And I'm like, what do you mean? And my husband was there, luckily, and could help with that a little bit, personal testimony. And I had the pretty common personality type of a lot of people who suffer with this, and kind of perfectionistic, achiever type of personality, and kind of hard on themselves. But went through my past and felt like, you know, I'm really well at the end, because we just talked about a lot of stuff, or I did, kind of gave him my whole history. Yeah. And so I'm trying to think what we went over exactly. But he kind of went over, he had me do the reading first, made sure I read, which I had already read his book. But he's like, read the first four chapters. We'll go over this. Journaling was the thing for him. He wanted me to start journaling on specific topics. It was like 20 minutes a day. And so I did that. But he was just such a relaxed, like calm person and just helped me. And I just remember one thing he said. He's like, one thing I tell, I'm sure to tell every patient of mine is this. And I thought it was something like profound. And he's like, I make sure every patient laughs in my office, like tells a joke. But he just understood that, like, I was more of a tightly wound person. And one of his things was like, I need to start doing things with more joy and just, you know, that was a takeaway. But he was just so caring. I was like, okay, I had seen him prior to going to the Mayo Clinic, and he was like, I would have advised you to do the Mayo Clinic first, then come here, just so we could, you know, after, because he's like, they may give you, the only type of diagnosis they're going to give you is something like more vague, like a fibromyalgia or something that's sure. not necessarily, it's not going to be some big structural thing. But, and he was very, very right about that, because I went after. And I'd say like my lowest, deepest, darkest part of my life, like spiraling in this whole issue, was after the Mayo, because I felt so, I didn't realize the hope I had in that, them still trying to find something. And it wasn't until I was done with that, and like a month later, I'm like, all right, I'm doing Schubiner's plan all the way. I'm like committing this time. And then it was like 9 months or so after that, I actually had the healing. But I think some of the best advice two, it was like the five F's not to do. And I've memorized because I would just go over them every day, but not to fear the pain, not to focus on the pain, think of other things. Don't be frustrated at it. Just be at peace with it, like ride the waves of the pain. And was don't fight it and don't fix it. So just accepting it, you know, and just moving on.
I thought for sure you were going to lay down, don't freak out. But maybe that's maybe that's a sixth F.
Yeah, it could be interfering too.
Right, same thing. So you had said it was like basically 9 months. What was your... Because the kind of thing that I'm hearing, and maybe this is the case for you, is that did there become like some kind of a daily practice or mm-hmm. was a lot of it just more cognitive? And because I think that Schubiner's approach is so much more ingrained in neural pathway stuff.
Yes.
You know, these are things that we've learned, and these are things that are essentially just like, you know, it's a wire and a feedback loop that just keeps going. And really you have to figure out a way to short circuit that. Which to me, at least in the year 2020, makes astronomically more sense than you know, hidden under the surface, repressed. I mean, that can totally be the case, of course. I'm hearing a dog.
Sorry, I let him out.
That's okay. Then like just this under the surface thing that you know that's all that there is to it. And maybe, you know, the work that Sarno could have done in the 80s or the 90s. Could not be as advanced on a brain neural pathway as it could be today, right? Just the fMRIs and all the scientific studies they're doing it, just because that technology didn't exist back then. But before we started rolling, you had said specifically that repression is a big thing for you. So mm-hmm. if you feel comfortable talking about some of those things, how, you know, what sort of things did you come with or unearth, and how do you think you got to them?
I mean, it wasn't a surprise. You know, things I knew would have affected me in the past, or that I would have, you know, kind of repressed. You don't necessarily repress the events and like, oh, I forgot that happened. But it's, for me, it was more so the emotions tied along with it. And I realized there was a lot of things I just didn't personally address emotionally, because I kind of grew up like, you know, you just forgive and forget. That's important. And I also was just such a people pleaser that I just wanted to make everyone happy and not drag anyone down, really.
Right.
So I realized, no, it's actually really important. Yeah, forgive people for sure, but you still need to address, you know, the hurt and the feelings you went through. I journaled majorly, pretty hardcore, I'd say. April, I started. So for a couple months, I journaled about anything that could have hurt.
About the events.
Just that, feelings. And,
like the events themselves. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And even, you know how there's the three sections of journaling. There's like past, present, and current, or past, present, and is it future? I'm not exactly sure.
I think it's, do you mean like the same ones that Sarno and Nicole Sachs use? So I think that those are, what is it? Personality traits, childhood issues, and what's the third one? It'll come to me.
Current stressors?
Perfect. Okay, I was going to say it's going to come to me at 3 a.m, but no, it's perfect. Okay, current stressors, yes.
So it was those things I journaled on really hardcore initially, and just really also emotionally from then on, if I didn't journal about things like the current stressors part, just taking time to address, like, how am I feeling right now? And asking yourself, like, checking in, how do I actually feel about this? This could be, because I realized, you know, it is an ingrained thing to kind of repress emotions. And so it's something you kind of have to learn when things come up. Like, okay, this is kind of a big deal. Like, how does this make me feel? Not necessarily acting on that, but just addressing it and being like, I feel this way. I feel angry right now. Yeah. This makes me sad. And journaling was pretty major, but I think honestly what took me a long time to heal was thinking that I had still being hard on myself, even with journaling, like I have to do this perfectly, you know, 20, 30 minutes a day. I'm not doing this, but I'm not healing quickly enough, like comparing myself to other healing stories of people who healed quicker. I'm just like, I'm not doing good enough, like, the science and everything makes sense to me, but maybe I'm just one of these people who doesn't heal, you know, and maybe my situation's different. But I think for me, I called him, Dr. Schubiner, like a few months into my, healing process.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, I'm having a hard time. I've had some good days, but like I actually had a stretch of 5 days that were so great, but then it comes back, or then I'll just get the major stiffness where I can hardly move. And I'm just like, why isn't this not working for me? And he was like, oh my gosh, this is great news. You had 5 good days in a row. He's like, that's proof. Like, you can stop doing the detective work, you know, like, you know, now it's absolutely TMS, and TMS is actually a good thing.
Yeah.
To have this, because it means there's nothing structurally wrong with you. And so looking at it that way, and also he gave me the example of like a dog, a puppy, training it, and how it just takes consistency, you know, being constant in the training, and for me, retraining. And something my husband actually said to me when I was just struggling, which actually was many times. I can say the healing, it's so not a linear process. For me, it was just like up and down, like good days, bad days. And my husband was like an awesome cheerleader for me during it. And one thing he said to me was, this is a mind-body thing, and everyone's mind is different. Because I struggled with comparing myself to like other people and their healing. And he was like, every mind is different. You know, you heal differently, you process things differently. We're not all the same. And, you know, you can't compare yourself to these other stories, and essentially just chill out a little bit. And so it really wasn't until I started this in April. So seeing if my math is right. But November, we took our like first honeymoon trip and went to Jamaica and stuff. And
where in Jamaica did you go?
Ochos Rios. Well, it was actually on a cruise, so we there in Haiti. But it was just so relaxing, is what I was gonna say. And I realized, like, I don't know if it's with kids and stuff. Even if we had taken little trips before, I don't think I've ever just like relaxed and chilled out like this. And it was such a big part, I think, of my healing, because I had felt better prior to that, but it wasn't until that point I was like, okay, this is actually, I had went that whole trip and it was going on like 3 weeks of no flare ups or anything.
And this, and I'm just, like, this okay. Is, this is just you and husband at the time, right?
Mm-hmm, okay. Yeah. So it was like 3 or 4 weeks and I'm like, all right, this is real. And like the longer the stretches became, and I saw like, okay, I get this. It's happening. Yeah, it was difficult. It was definitely the hardest thing I've ever done. And it seemed like such a simple concept, you know, believing it and just going back to your normal life. I mean, believing in the TMS diagnosis. And like Schubiner says, believe at 100% level that it's TMS and slowly reintroduce your old activities. But it's so hard not to second guess when, you know, you're having these flare-ups and you're your own worst enemy in your mind sometimes. Like, is this real? Am I actually doing the right thing? Am I making myself worse? And You just have to kind of see it and just get that snowball rolling.
In that, the post-pain life, I guess we'll call it. Did you continue I know you said that you had been journaling, and then, you called Dr. Sarno, Dr. Schubiner, not necessarily distressed, but hey, you know, I had a couple of weeks where this thing went away, but it's been really, really troublesome. The suggestions that he may have given you at the time, was it more like, hey, continue to journal, or hey, you just need to be cognizant of these things and the reasons why, you know, the detective hat thing, like you mentioned. Did it lead to you doing like more journaling and more unearthing and more of all that? Or was it like, you need to have the calm and the confidence behind it, and that's the more critical part here?
Yeah, the latter, calm and confidence behind it, because I had done all the journaling. I had really, probably to the extreme, like, I'm going to figure this out, you know. And I think it's not finding that one event that happened or anything. It's at that point, he was like, you've got this, you know, this has happened for you already, even like little tastes of it. But the healing has, and it was more so like, just ride the waves of your brain calming down and The bad days are important for retraining, you know, and looking at it that way. And you're going to have them, but, you know, I'm proud of you for doing this. And it, like, that was exactly what I needed to hear.
Yeah. What a guy.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, you're naming the third kid after him. so you've got that. Your husband, I'm very curious, because I think that the ways to which a lot of times that we communicate with spouses, and because there's still going to be frustrating times in marriages and with kids and with friends and all that kind of stuff, but I feel like they are maybe not necessarily dealt with completely differently, but interpreted really differently afterwards. So how has that relationship maybe changed or evolved with your husband as well as your kids since, you know, in the last 2 years, since this stuff went away?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, like I said, he was great during it. I don't think I could have done it without him. The healing aspect during it wasn't, I would say, if anything, it strengthened our relationship, because during my like lowest part, it got so bad that like it was around the time after we went to the Mayo Clinic, you know, you can spiral so quickly that when you're in pain, I mean, I was in bed for, it was a stretch of like, I don't know, a couple weeks maybe. And just like, what is my point? Like, what am I doing here? I'm hardly functioning. I'm not doing housework. I can't drive. Like, because mine was in my leg when I would hit the gas pedal. That's why I thought it was a structural thing. Like, whenever I touched the gas pedal, it would go like burning up my calf.
Yeah.
So bad. So it just got really dark, and he totally helped like steer me in the right times. He's like, you have to keep doing this. And initially I thought I could just be like, okay, I agree with this. I'm going to try this out for a couple weeks. And if this doesn't work, this whole mind body thing, I'm going to move on to the next thing. And he's like, this was after meeting with Dr. Schubiner. Like, I was like, I'm going to give this a try for a few weeks, but I like put a limit on it. And he was like, why would you do that? He's like, if you heard him, you have to like be all in this and actually believe it. You're not believing it 100% if you're only doing it for a couple weeks, you know?
Isn't it kind of wild? So, like, how that transpires is that, you know, you, people, it's so easy to kind of go all in that this is a physical thing, right? But to go all in the other way, it's easy. I think it's easier for you and I to sort of stand here or sit here, and 2020 hindsight, of course, is always so easy, but for us to say that, you know, it's like, why not go all in on it? But I mean, I guess that I understand too. I'm curious on the, kind of your, you'd said repression was such a big thing for you. And after the, after that pain had gone away, did you have instances where some of it came back, and it was more your confidence just took it away? And what sort of things would you do if it did?
Okay. Yeah, it did come back several times. It came back with this whole, I know this is kind of being recorded for a few weeks out, but right now in the whole coronavirus pandemic, I actually found it flaring up. The most recently was like a few days ago, and it lasts. My flare-ups never are like a day or two long. They're usually a week or longer. Wow. And just enough to scare you. And so it wasn't a major one, but I could still, I don't know, maybe like a 30-40% pain level. I would compare it to how it used to be, but I could still feel some burning and stuff. And now when that happens, I think, okay, I actually have to stop and be with myself, like just stop moving, like call my brain and be like, what is going on right now? What am I feeling? In those instances, I don't always journal, but if I'm really feeling it, like I actually did last week and just wrote out, okay, you know, this is what's bothering me right now, even if I'm not recognizing it, or just wait until something does come in your mind, but just being present. And like the whole thing, people will say sometimes TMS stands for tell me something, like what is my body trying to tell me? But it is a big thing. And I, with the coronavirus, I have, sorry, a couple people in my life that are more susceptible, or I guess high risk, not susceptible to the virus, but if they were to get it, it's a more dangerous thing. And I'm like, okay, maybe that is actually affecting me, and I have to address that I'm feeling upset about that. I'm feeling nervous about that. So yeah, that was my most recent flare up, and now I'm feeling great again.
Yeah, but... my next thing was gonna be, how do you feel right now?
He answered perfect. So... I mean, not perfect. Like I get it. Like Nicole Sachs will say, we'll have human pains, and that's a real thing. Like they pop up, but no, never ever as low as I was like a year ago from right now. Yeah, I'd say when I feel like a flare up, I don't freak out. I'm calm. And I mean, it's nervous to get a little anxious if it's a few days and you're still kind of feeling it.
Right.
And I wouldn't say it's ever constant, kind of comes and goes, but it's just like you have to tell yourself what the truth is. And the truth is there's nothing physically wrong with me, structurally wrong with me. And just address what's going on right now. Take some time for yourself. Journal what's going on.
Now, something that will be interesting is just for some context to the people listening, as we record this, it is Thursday, March the 19th. And this, by the time you're hearing this, it's likely going to be the end of April or so. So we're talking about more than a month out, and who knows what the state of the universe will be at that point in time. So maybe we'll look back on this and we'll say, wow, that was, you know, we flattened the curve really, really well. And, but if you watch some of the videos of spring breakers in Florida, you probably think, oh, we're not really going to flatten the curve all that well. How at this point, cause I would imagine you'd mention those two people that are close to you that, if they did catch it, something cataclysmic could happen, right? And of course, we don't want that to happen. The what ifs are so what ifs and an anxiety are intertwined so much. And this is TMS stuff is very it's very anxiety driven. Like that's the whole idea. So, how do you? I guess in the moment, if you start having a thought like, "What if this person catches it? What if they get very sick? What if something happens?" We can get into that spiraled thought. So what's something that you would do or recommend to somebody where you can sort of, you know, throw a stick in the spokes of that bike to get it to slow down or chill out?
I would say just like preach the truth to yourself and don't let the fear, your thoughts can spiral so quickly and you need to take your thoughts captive in that instance and be like, there's so many what ifs every day that could happen. You know, not with a virus, but anything. You could walk out in the street and get hit by the bus, you know, and just believing, okay, I'm going to be present in this moment and I'm going to live in this moment and not in the what ifs that could happen, but just doing your best right now. And I mean, it doesn't mean for right now, with everything going on for us, I don't know what it's going to look like in a few weeks, but the people like hoarding toilet paper, hoarding groceries, like you don't have to do that. You can be prepared, you know, stock up on a few things, but you don't need to, you know, panic and like to the extreme. You know what I'm saying? Like you can be smart with that without completely going overboard. And fear is, it's just, the mind can induce the whole, you know, physiological symptoms in your body with your immunity, with stress. Like it stops your immunity from being at its fullest. Like the fear just does the opposite of what you're wanting to do to your body right now. I don't know how to exactly explain it, but.
No, I think that's, I think that's, okay. No, I think it's well put and I think it's complete. I guess, you know, we're kind of getting to the end of this thing here, and obviously it's impossible to tell what the future is going to hold. Or, one of the things that I always like to get from parents, is how has this experience maybe changed the way, cause you had said that the pain began six weeks after your first child or your second child?
Second.
Okay. So, so you had some experience prior to that. How has this changed your parenting style or how you handle issues with your kid or however it is they're feeling, before kind of all this happened and then after, you know, how do you handle those kind of, I think that parenting is so hand in hand with TMS stuff and it's so much pressure to put on yourself and putting on your kids. And talk a little bit about parenting and TMS.
Well, initially I would say I felt a lot of guilt during my whole at my worst part when I was in pain and I thought I was so structurally broken, because it was just kind of reiterated by doctors, and specifically for me, like going to a chiropractor and talking about good posture and how I shouldn't carry my child down the stairs and all these things. So initially, after I healed, I felt a whole lot of guilt for like the time I wasn't able to pick my child up after he woke up and carrying him down the stairs, just all that missed time. I was kind of heartbroken about that. But I have to just move on and be thankful for where I am now. And I would say, like, the stressors you're referring to, you know, we all have so many stressors day to day with our kids.
Yeah.
I would say just having a little more grace with them, probably. I'm definitely not perfect. They're one of my biggest causes of stress, I would say. I love them so much. But just in the last, you know, few days, it's very difficult to you love them so, so much, but just for me, it's just being patient and without, I guess, repressing. Like, it was a big thing, because I think you're referring to like feeling maybe guilty about yelling at them, or because I would have, you know, you go to bed and you're like, oh, shoot. I feel like I yelled a lot today, or I wasn't patient with them or kind, but they're very stressful. And so for me, it's kind of giving myself grace. Like, no, I'm not a perfect parent. I'm not going to be a perfect parent, but I did do my best today. And, you know, you can just improve. For me, it's something, you know, I pray about a lot, that I give them grace that I, you know, would want to have, because they're learning and they need it. But, I was going to say something else too. Crying. Like, it's something I've definitely been able to have a little bit more patience with, is going through all this and learning, you know, the whole repression thing we talked about. Like if my son, I just feel like my 5-year-old is my youngest now, but he cries a lot. He has a lot of tantrums, and just, something that may seem silly to him, just letting him cry it out and being like, I don't shut it down instantly now. I try not to anymore. Say like, no crying, don't cry about that. You're fine. No crying. Because I think it is kind of important that they get things out and, can express their feelings, yeah. You know? So I say that's probably a change that I've had, when it comes to parenting. But, it's been a journey for sure.
How old are your two kids?
My oldest is 9 and my youngest is 5.
And they're boy, girl?
Two boys. So, yeah.
So you're a boy mom.
A lot of energy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, no, I think that's great. I think a lot of the reflection on parenthood and things like that, especially at the critical ages that your kids are. Your youngest is the same age as my oldest. And so, you know, we're at 5 and 2 and I'm a girl dad and you're a boy mom. And so that's interesting. But my... I feel like our relationship with our kids has only gotten better, you know, and when I mean better, I mean with a lot more depth. Like, in fact, if I'm if I seem like I'm being a jerk, or I'm not, you know, I'm not or I'm acting angry, or I'm, you know, really whatever these things are, that I feel like a lot of times, you know, you can kind of like sit there and huff and puff and your kids just sort of. They take it, and then you're like repressing the fact, and then you're angry about the fact that you're angry, and you kind of go through this spiral. My 5-year-old, we do so much talk and work around just emotions and feelings and stuff that she will call me out on shit like that, and just, you know, she'll say,
yeah.
You know, you're angry, don't act like that, you know, that kind of thing, or what are you feeling, or how are you feeling? So it's, you know, it's kind of cool to see the kind of impact that we can have on our kids in that way.
Yeah, that's so great. The emotion thing, it's really great. And I love that they're teaching some mindfulness and stuff. And my son's, my youngest goes to like a Head Start before kindergarten. And they have a section on that too. And he was like, the other day he was pointing his arms straight up at the dinner table. And I'm like, what are you doing? And he goes, I do this when I'm angry. And he had his hands straight up and he was breathing with his eyes closed. I'm like, okay. You do that, honey. But it was cute. But, it's been a journey, but with the whole like carrying and the feeling guilty I said about like carrying, not being able to carry him down the stairs because now he's at the age he doesn't ask anymore, you know, to be picked up and carried down after a nap.
Yeah.
And it was like, that was something for me that was like, I was almost bitter for a little bit. Like I lost all this time of like, I couldn't carry my child. I always said, no, no, no. And like, that was one of the things he learned. He goes, oh, mommy's back hurts or mommy's leg and you can't do this. And it was just, oh, it was awful. Like yeah. Looking back on that.
I mean, I watch my cat sometimes and the way that she lays and sits and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I'm not thinking, oh, your posture is terrible, Stella, right? So it's just interesting how, condition that kind of stuff can lead us to have those kind of thoughts and all that. I totally get it. Well, Steph, thank you so much for your time. Again, it's going to be very interesting for us to look back in a few weeks and sort of see what has transpired throughout the remainder of March and April. But I appreciate you finding the time to jump on with me for a little bit and us to kind of hear your story. I think this is going to resonate with a lot of people. So, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I just am happy to, you know, if anyone's struggling, like I was, like listening to your podcast, as well as Nicole Sachs, was such a like benefit for me, and just knowing that people could heal from this and that they could actually do it. So I'm just thankful for you putting that out there, and you know, everyone who's doing this to just promote the truth about it.
Yeah,
it's important.
Definitely, awesome. All right, Steph, I appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Have a good one.